Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Learning Pod Network, brought to you by Impact Connections, where we'll be taking a deep dive into the new world of learning pods that are driving educational innovation around the world. I'm your host, Steve Eno. The world has been changed forever by COVID-19. Right now, families and schools around the country are trying to figure out the best way forward without much support. That is why we have created the Impact Connections Learning Pod Network. We believe small group learning, driven by family needs and supported through a network of strong relationships, can improve education for everyone in this moment and beyond. On this podcast, we'll bring you advice from innovative educators and experts to help you create the best learning experience possible. To stay up to date with our latest tools and offerings, please check out our website at www.impactconnections.org. Hi, everyone. On today's episode, we have a great pediatrician joining us who has been told by her company that she is not allowed to be on social media. She's not allowed to give interviews. And so, unfortunately, we can't use her name or her work because that is the world that we live in today, where doctors are told that they need to do their job but can't have an opinion on anything that might upset anyone outside the company. And so this gives some insights into what doctors are thinking about COVID and specifically what pediatricians recommend in terms of how we manage risk and how we help our kids continue to grow and thrive during this time. Please enjoy my conversation with this great pediatrician. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining. I thought we could get started just by kind of getting an overview of your role in terms of helping kids, helping families just be their best selves and be healthy.
So I'm a pediatrician, and I've done everything from academics for 8 years. And then I've done ER work as well. And I work as a pediatrician now with a company. So I've been involved with kids for a while. And as a mom myself, I'm involved in a different aspect as a mother in terms of raising children.
Awesome. Thank you. And in terms of your current role as a pediatrician, I think that's where I'd love to dig into a little bit further, because I take my kids to a pediatrician, but I don't know all the ins and outs of what pediatricians do and what they look for. So yeah, I'd love to just get a quick overview of what you view are the key components when you work with kids, when you do checkups, and how you view what's the most important things to look out for.
Sure. So I see kids as soon as they're born to the time of when they're about 18 to 19 years old. So I'm looking for everything from healthy growth of kids to how they're socializing to motor development, fine motor development, language development, and into how they're doing at school to how they're socializing and the general trajectory of their growth, basically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And I know it can be tough with the medical system now. Doctors are getting less and less time with patients. So I'm curious, that's a wide range of topics. And I'd love to hear, how do you try and get all of that detailed information in a short time period in seeing your patients maybe once a year? How do you get such good data in such a short period of time?
Yeah, so it's tough with the way we're doing things nowadays, with given my finite time slot to see patients. And I would say that it's an ebb and flow system where I may go over with some patients and under with some patients. And it's dependent on me building a relationship with them. And sometimes it flows into them sending me messages or whatnot. And it's actually basically building a relationship with them. So sometimes I should say that I do go over that time slot that's given with some people versus others. But it's generally building a relationship with each and every person going forward and seeing what their needs are as a family and how they want to do things. So I feel my role as a pediatrician is being a guide. It's not to say that this is what you need to do, but giving them a broad sense of what they need and going from there. So I would say that it's giving them certain things and seeing what they want as a family and going forward with that. Sometimes I should say that I do tend to receive messages and I do it in my own hours after work, just because I think that that's what I'm there for pretty much. So I think that I need to give every family the tools as to succeed with their children. And it depends on everything from growth, vaccines, to other things.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. And in terms of what families can do and what parents can do, we hear about the medical system trying to shift to being more proactive than reactive. And I know me personally, like I think of going to the doctor when my kids are sick or when there's something wrong with them. But what are some recommendations that you have in terms of how families and parents can be more proactive in terms of how they interact with a pediatrician, what to look out for, just so parents aren't necessarily only relying on a pediatrician for like these emergency cases or when their kid's sick? How can we be a little bit more proactive in terms of helping our kids stay healthy?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So number one, I would say is before you go in to see your pediatrician, it's sometimes you wonder about things with your child and you may notice something with your child, but you may not remember it when you go to your doctor's appointment. It's writing it down. So I love it when someone comes in with a list of things that they're worried about beforehand. And it serves as a great tool to address their concerns. So I love it when a family has a bunch of questions to ask and they've written them down. And then they come to me and say, these are the things that I'm worried about with my child. And so then I can address it piece by piece, basically. So I love it when certain families do that. And that's something that every family can do. Number one. And number two is just touching base with a pediatrician about, okay, my child is doing this in school. What do you think, you know, or what do I need to do next? So that's another thing. And then regarding growth and everything, it's telling me this is what I'm doing health-wise. How can I change it? So, you know, these are things that if a family's proactive about, they get addressed sooner than later.
Got it. Thank you. And in terms of that connection between health and education, health and learning, how do you help families manage that relationship and making sure kids are healthy, but also making sure they're progressing in their learning and in their education? Do you have information that you look out for or that you like to hear from parents? And how do you guide families through that extra layer of learning in school as well?
Yeah, so regarding the extra layer of learning in school, so it's honestly so family dependent because I should say it's a wide range of people. So I would say that it's knowing what your goals are as a family, you know, and putting that forward. But for me, it's basically making sure that for the younger kids from 0 to 5 years old, are they meeting their needs, like in terms of fine motor skills, gross motor skills, speech, and all of that? And it's bringing to my attention when I'm asking questions too, as to how the child is doing. So I should say it's both of us working together for the betterment of the child. So I would say that for the younger children, it's being totally upfront with how your child is doing and not feeling embarrassed about anything, because I'm there to help you. And if I say, why don't you look at this? It's not putting a roadblock, but saying, okay, let's look at this together. So that's one thing. And for the older children, the school age children, it's everything from how are they doing at school to do they need something else for school that I could help them with. And then if there are services available through the school, it's making them available basically.
Got it. Thank you. And in terms of that information that you get from families and from kids, I know sometimes it can be hard for adults to get information out of kids or the older high school age kids. So I'm curious, I guess in general, what have you seen as some of the most important information that tends to be really hard to get from families or from kids? What do you wish families and kids told you more about so that you can kind of have a bigger impact?
I would say honestly, for the older kids, especially the kids that are entering their teen years to the adult years, it's being upfront and honest how they're doing with their family, with their friends, and being open and upfront about how they're feeling, meaning, are they feeling stressed a little bit, or are they having challenges in their life? And that's sometimes hard to gauge and discuss because it's something that most older kids don't want to discuss with an adult, even me, per se. But it's forming that bond so that they feel comfortable saying that their information is not going to be shared with anybody unless they're a harm for themselves. So it's making sure that everybody is emotionally healthy and mentally healthy too. And I think that, it poses a challenge sometimes because once you want to say, it would be great to talk to a therapist, for instance, there's a huge stigma attached to that. And for me, it's taking that stigma away and saying this is a good thing.
Got it. And in terms of that, I guess, current health trends, I'm going to ask the question that's on a lot of parents' minds right now. How do you help families and kids manage and handle COVID and the stress that comes along with that? What are some recommendations that you have for families in terms of just handling COVID and everything that comes along with it?
So yeah, so that's a big thing right there. And COVID makes regarding COVID, so everybody's doing the virtual learning nowadays because of COVID. So everybody's in their house and they're missing, I feel for kids, the main thing with school, it's not just the learning piece, but the other piece is the socialization between classmates, going to lunch, having recess or whatnot. So for a parent, that provides a hard challenge because you may be getting the school piece, but you're missing out on the social piece. So I would say as a parent, it's forming those little connections with other family members, or not family members, but school age kids and families that are the same age, so that they can have a bit of socialization between their pals while being COVID safe, I should say, and not exposing themselves to the virus and everything. So, and that poses a huge challenge, I think, because you want to be safe and at the same time you want to socialize. So I would say it's finding those two or three families that are your kids' school age that are safe COVID-wise and kids together, I would say.
Thank you for that recommendation. And in terms of what you've been seeing in your practice and your conversations with families, have you noticed any trends with kids in terms of how they've changed through COVID? Because I think that's one of the big questions that I have, and I think a lot of parents have, is how is COVID impacting our kids? How is the stress on the whole world, but in terms of shutdowns and virtual learning, have you seen any trends?
Yeah, so I would say it's very child dependent because I feel like every child is born with their own personality and their own emotional tolerance of things. It's very child specific, where one child will worry more than the other child. So I would say that it's very child specific. So one child's worry, maybe another child's non-worry. I should say that. So it's basically gauging your child to see how they're feeling and how they're tolerating things and how their perception is, and making them feel secure. So while one child may be totally worried that the whole world is going to end, another child may not be feeling like that. So I would say, as a parent, it's taking each child for their own well-being and their own personality and dealing with it. So it's making every child feeling secure and safe. So while one child may not worry about it and may not think about socializing, another child may be worried about that, or, you know, when am I going to go back to school, or, you know, other things that are affecting them. So it's taking each child separately, I would say, and making sure that each child feels secure and safe.
I'm wondering, is there other suggestions? I know with COVID, obviously we're getting more information every day, and sometimes the changes are the way we perceive things. Do you have any other recommendations in terms of how parents can help their kids and their families manage the risk of COVID, and in terms of like rubbing down surfaces or items or going to the park? Do you have any recommendations on here? But here's where we're at right now, and here's what we think is safe.
Yeah, so I honestly think that wearing masks is important. Wiping down surfaces, you know, just hand hygiene. And then if you're out and about, wiping your hands and using hand sanitizer. I would say that I still think going to the park is an important thing, especially for kids. So I would say, yes, go to the park. But if there's multiple people there, I would regress from that. But if there's maybe one or two families, I still would say going to the park is an important thing for your children. But if other people are symptomatic around you, it's taking it back step and saying, okay, this is not the right thing. But, you know, it's gauging each situation for itself. So if you feel that the other people look happy and healthy, you know, and are doing precautions themselves, then going to use some monkey bars and going to use the slide is an important thing in a child's life. So it's going and doing that is my take on that.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, because that's a huge part of our day. I know getting outside and going to the park is something our boys look forward to. So yeah, we definitely are trying to do our best managing that as well. I'd love to shift the conversation back to education a little bit more and get your perspective from being a pediatrician, but also being a mother, in terms of how we help our kids throughout the different stages of their lives. And I think a lot of parents are reaching out to me and saying, well, what should my child be doing at age 5 or age 6 or age 7? And so I'm curious, in terms of your experience, do you have a roadmap?
Yeah, I do, because I would say that each child has their own learning trajectory and what they're capable of doing. So while maybe one 5-year-old is doing multiplications, another 5-year-old may be good at language. So it's looking at each one of your children's strengths, basically, early on, and saying, okay, my child is good at this, but not good at this. How can I help my child? So I feel like that's like beyond COVID, because I think, you know, school, public school or private school in itself, is basically, it's like, it's taking the average of all children, I would say, and saying this is the syllabus for all children, but it has to be individualized to each child, in my opinion. So like I said, I feel like every child is different in what they're good at, what they're not, and their strengths and their weaknesses. So I would say that, especially with COVID going on, it's looking at your child, seeing what they need, and it's not bombarding them with schoolwork either, but it's either supplementing them. There's so many programs, even online, and I've looked at it myself for children, and it's implementing that with the schoolwork that's given by the teacher to help your child. And it depends on what your child is interested in too. So if they have an interest in something, it's looking at that interest and broadening it, but at the same time trying to balance it out with other things. So I feel that with COVID, the onus is on parents more to work with their children, but I would say it's always been there before COVID as well. So I feel that the teacher is only half the battle, it's on the parents as well to guide their children and make them happy and just well-balanced in general.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I agree wholeheartedly, and helping parents take on that bigger role is something that we hope to help out with as well. And I'm curious, in terms of helping parents take on that bigger role, what are some recommendations that you have from a health standpoint? Because obviously education is tied closely to health, and kids can't learn if they're not healthy.
In my opinion, it's having them have a good night of sleep. So I'm a big believer that kids should have a good night of sleep. So, you know, it's not having your child go to bed like at 11 o'clock at night and saying, okay, it's time for you to get up. I think children especially work well with a little bit of structure in their life, but not in entirety. So it's sort of giving them a blanket structure, and within that structure, giving them freedom. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But it's basically having enough sleep at night, giving them healthy foods, and then going by what they want to do. Because I feel like we're there to give them that balanced life of how to do things in the future. So, you know, some of the things I look for in kids is, are they getting a good night of rest? Are they, you know, having good nutrition, basically, you know? So I feel like those two things go hand in hand with learning.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think one of the hardest parts of being a parent is helping kids on the nutrition side. And so I was wondering, do you have any recommendations on the nutrition side in terms of helping your kids eat healthy? And do you recommend like supplements with like the vegetable powders that have, I guess, a little bit more nutrients to help them if they don't like vegetables? Mm-hmm. Do you have any best practices for the nutrition side?
So I would say that, you know, because there's so many different diets out there right now. I mean, there's everything from being totally vegan to being a vegetarian to doing paleo to doing other things, you know, where I would say no matter what you choose, even if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, it's having that protein intake. And if you're doing that, giving them multivitamins on a daily basis and maybe an omega-3 thrown in there and giving those multivitamins on a daily basis. And if they don't like something, then implementing something else. And regarding all the stuff that's out there right now, some of the stuff out there is a good thing. I mean, you've got everything from your acai powder to there's so many other things out there, but it's seeing what they like and then you making sure that they have a little bit of component of your greens and everything. The main thing is keeping processed foods to a minimum is what I would say, but at the same time, if they want a treat like ice cream or something, going out and doing it.
Yeah,
no, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think those type of treats are definitely some of the special weekly occasions during COVID quarantines and these kind
exactly.
of shutdowns. So yeah, no, thank you for that insight. In terms of that level of detail, that level of information that we're getting for nutrition, I enjoy reading the latest news in terms of biohacking and some of the data that we're gathering in terms of genetics and gut biomes and all that stuff. I'm curious, mm-hmm. how much or how close do you think we are to being able to use some of that more advanced
information to help our kids grow at the rate that is best for them and to have the best diet and nutrition and sleep cycle mm-hmm. that is best for them. Are we close to using that in practice and helping families?
I honestly feel it's such a wide range right there, because because I get everybody from, you know, some families who, I'll be honest with you. So, you know, regarding that information, it's so family dependent on how you're going to use that information. I think that using the information regarding, like, you know, the bacteria in your gut and all of that, that's important. But at the same time, it every family needs to be ready to use that information. And some families may not be ready as much as others, I would say. So it's almost taking that information and seeing whether a family is ready for it or not, if that makes sense. But I think that that information is very valuable, and using it to say, okay, this is where I'm on point with my nutrition and I'm not on point with my nutrition, if that makes sense. For me, I get such a various range of families. It's almost, you know, saying, you know, these are my recommendations. What are your thoughts on it? And it's meeting in the middle, I would say, you know,
yeah.
with everybody. So, because you can't, in my opinion, it's a medium that I find. So it's, I'm only 50%, parents are 50%, and I want them to be comfortable with the judgments and the calls that they make, and I'm there to help them and guide them. So it's honestly meeting in the middle, sort of, and helping me help them. So I'm not there to say, you know, I'm not the warden, I should say, where it's this way or that way, or it's my way or the highway, should I say, because there's so many different ways of doing things.
Right. I'm wondering, along those lines, in terms of mm-hmm. nutrition and health of kids, I think a third component is exercise. And I think mm-hmm. during COVID, it might be a little bit more challenging for kids. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Yeah, no, I think you're so on point with that, because with COVID setting in, everything's taken a step back. So exercise got taken a step back for kids, their games, sports, or whatever activities they're doing, whether you're going ice skating or gymnastics or whatnot, or you're doing flag football, everything's taken a back seat. So, and then, you know, a big proponent with kids going to school is recess, where they run around with their friends, they hang out, and they run for a while, play, hang out again. So that's gone. So I would say that being active physically is very important for children, and getting at least 60 minutes in for a child, no matter what their age, is a good thing, whether it's a walk or going skateboarding or just going for sort of a mini run, I would say, those things, or just doing stuff with your children, you know, via Zoom, is an important thing.
And I'm wondering, in terms of that exercise, you mentioned doing a wide range of activities. I've interacted and talked to some parents who almost take the specialization route to the extreme, and they do like travel baseball year round, and their kid ends mm-hmm. up getting hurt. I'm curious, as a pediatrician, do you have any recommendations in terms of finding that balance between like too much specialization or too much exercise in one area and kids getting hurt versus spreading it around and trying lots of different things?
I would say that I know certain children who do the travel route, like travel baseball, travel soccer, you know, and that stuff. And that, I think it depends on what the child feels about it. You know, if the child is gung-ho to do the sport and they love it, then I should say, as a parent, you should promote it. But if they're sort of not feeling it, but they're sort of doing it for the parent, then I would say back out and look at other things. You know, regarding the risk of getting injured, I would say the biggest issue with getting injured when you're doing a sport like baseball, football, or whatever, is stretching exercises and mobility. And sometimes that's left out out of the picture. So it's getting that stuff in for your child if you were, you know, a gunner with a sport like that, basically. You know, but at the same time, it should be gauging what your child wants to do and how passionate they are. And if they're not entirely passionate, but it's your passion, it's backing it off a little bit.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And I'm curious, as a mother and how you have helped your kids grow, is there anything that you have changed or modified based on what you found as a pediatrician in terms of, oh, I realized this study came out or this is the trend I'm seeing with kids? Have you adjusted your own, I guess, process and way to help out your kids?
Yeah, so I think the main thing is I would say, because I've got two. So with my first, I was gung-ho about certain sports, I should say, more than they were. And it was literally putting my ego in check and saying, my kid is not interested in this, but my kid is interested in this instead. And it's sort of tempering it to what your goals are, to what their goals are. And that's something that I've had to do with my first, which has translated to my second. So my first did a wide range of things in the beginning, from lacrosse to everything, where he came back to me and said, I do not like lacrosse. I love soccer. So it's sort of tempering your expectations sometimes a little bit and saying, you know, and then he wanted to do certain other things. So it's saying, okay, you want to do these other things. How am I going to help you do these other things, basically? So I think as a parent, it's sometimes like putting your goals aside, seeing what your child wants. Or like, for instance, my daughter, I asked her, because her school is doing a morning news report and you can apply for that as a morning newscast, quote unquote, while doing virtual. And my daughter said, I am not interested in that 100%. So it's saying, okay, you're not interested in that. I'm going to take a step back, say that's your call to make, and it's fine if you don't want to do this.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think that's definitely a challenge that I have too, in terms of removing my ego and really letting my kids lead in terms of what we explore and how we choose the activities that we do. So cool. Thank you. I'd love to switch gears a little bit. It's getting to the fall season, and that is typically closing in on flu season. And obviously we have the flu vaccine is now out. How do you help families think about vaccines? And there's a lot of bad information out there. And how do you help parents realize what is true and what's not true when it comes to that type of
information? Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff out there. I have families who want to wait on vaccines, and I've got families that say we want to do everything. So it's, you know, the thing with the vaccines are that these are diseases that I have never seen in my lifetime, but they were there beforehand. And so it's telling them what the risks versus the benefits are for each vaccine. Number one, how your child gets protected from the vaccine, what an outbreak would mean if an outbreak would occur, because I would say that I have never seen measles in my life. So it's making those risks aware to parents versus the benefits of, you know, the benefits of vaccines versus the risks of you not getting it, and what an outbreak would mean to society and to other children as well. So, you know, it's giving that information to each parent and why we're doing the vaccines and what the schedule is important, and what the side effects are too are very important, and how it translates to health. It's my obligation to give all of that information. Regarding the flu shot, yes, you know, the flu shot is different every year. Sometimes it's total spot on process where they get the strain right. Sometimes it's not, but even if the strain that they get is the wrong strain, getting the flu vaccine is a good idea because it does shorten the course of the illness. If you were sick for 2-3 days, if you got the flu vaccine. Maybe if you didn't get the flu vaccine, you'd be sick for a longer time.
Thank you for that information. I think that's valuable for everyone to hear. And along the lines of vaccines, I think I saw a study where I think only 50% of the United States would opt in and get a COVID vaccine. Do you think that that's something, obviously COVID's very new, it's very different, and the vaccine process is unique in terms of how they're developing it. But do you think that's something we need to start tackling now in terms of how we communicate what a COVID vaccine would do, or how do you think, how do you perceive that piece of information that
only- regarding the COVID vaccine, there's so much stuff out there regarding the regarding COVID, number one, regarding getting the vaccine. And I hate when it gets politicized, I should say, because a vaccine is only as good as the vaccine trials that it gets. So it needs to be tested and vetted before the population can get it. So I do understand where 50% of the population are wary of it, because it shouldn't be pushed as a political point, number one, but as a health point. So I feel like the COVID vaccine needs to be vetted based on vaccine trials, number one, and saying that it's valuable and relevant. So it's not just the FDA pushing it, but it's showing the studies to people saying it does help. And I feel that it's a political standpoint with the vaccine and shouldn't be politicized, because the more it is, the more people will back off probably and say, I'm not for this. So it just needs to go through all the protocols, a standard vaccine trial for anything else before it gets released.
And along those lines, I think it's getting harder and harder for people to separate out what is good science and good medicine and what is political. And so I'm wondering, do you have any suggestions or recommendations on how we can separate out politics from actual medicine and actual high quality recommendations?
So I would say the number one thing regarding that is doing what everyone should be doing even before COVID started, which is hand hygiene. And that existed before COVID. Number one is hand hygiene, keeping yourself hygienic. And then with COVID, it's, you know, definitely wear a mask when you're out and about. And it's, you know, if you do have symptoms of a cold or whatnot, it's staying at home until you get better or feel better. And then it's, you know, when stuff is getting politicized, it's taking a step back, putting your views aside and seeing what is right health-wise, basically. And it's looking towards your health team or your doctors and seeing what they recommend, I'd say. And also it's following the CDC guidelines and looking at the CDC website is an important thing too.
Got it, thank you. And I guess along some of those lines of the impact that COVID is having on all of us, do you think that the increase in virtual visits with doctors, do you think that that might help you as a pediatrician in the long run build better relationships and get better information from families?
I think that, you know, telemedicine is a brand new thing. Even though it's been around for years, nobody ever took it and ran with it until COVID started. So I feel that telemedicine is amazing when used right with the right tools. And I feel that it reaches out to a broader population of families. And it gives them, it gives families and the doctor an easier way to communicate with, you know, with their patients and everything. With that said, it sometimes I would say it's giving them the tools at home used for giving us data like vital signs, because I know that companies are good about like giving their patients, say, like, you know, I don't know, like a pulse ox machine that they can use at home or whatnot to do the vitals, or a temperature check or whatnot. So So, you know, giving the patients that tools on one end, if you're working with them, and on the other end, I think that telemedicine helps a ton in reaching out to families, especially if they're worried or scared of coming out. So it's definitely a great way to communicate.
You mentioned Pulse Ox. Could you give a rundown of what Pulse Ox is for families and if there's any other important vital measurement tools that they could have at their house?
Yeah, so the Pulse Ox is mainly looking at your oxygen saturation, how well your body's oxygenated. And it's a simple little tool you can even get from Amazon, I would say. So it's having that, and it does your oxygen level, your heart rate, and that kind of stuff. And it's not that expensive. It maybe costs like $10 or so. And it's giving that, your temperature, you know, having a thermometer in the house, recording it. And, you know, and I think those are like basic, simple things that a family can do. Some families do have, if you've got like high blood pressure running in your family, a blood pressure monitor in your house. So it's basically giving us all of that data. And that said, it has to be used with some hindsight. So you can't worry about it because you have it and get fixated on it either, but it's to temper it and not check in multiple times a day because then you'll be driving yourself nuts. So, you know, it has to be just used as maybe a one or two times once in a while tool.
Right. And yeah, I was just about to ask you that because I have a watch that I use primarily for exercise, but I love looking at the charts of like my breathing or my heart rate. And so I was going to say, what is the optimal number of times we should check like our pulse ox or our blood pressure so that it is a good balance between good amount of data, but not overdoing it?
Yeah, regarding the pulse oximetry, maybe like once, if you're healthy, maybe once a month or something. But say you're, you know, there's so many gadgets out there, everything from Fitbit to what is it, Whoop, which is like this band that you wear. Mm-hmm. And it gives you everything from, are you ready to work out or not? Are you like, you know, did you get enough sleep? And that stuff, I feel like it's so dependent on the person. But if you're wearing on one of those, it's taking all those, all that data for a weekend, looking at it and then going forward. So I don't dismiss that because I think it's a good tool to have, you know, and even the Apple Watch gives everything from your heart rate to your tray rate to all of those things, all of those numbers, but it's not taking one number in particular, but taking them on a week or 2 weeks value and looking at it and saying, okay, what do I need to do more? I would say so. Data is important, but you can't fixate on it at the same time.
Right. Thank you for that. And so to wrap up, I'm curious, like if you could get anything you wanted as a pediatrician, in terms of data or new tools or new ways to interface with your patients, what would you be your dream scenario or technology or improvement that you would add to your practice in the future?
That's a good question. I would say data-wise or tools-wise, because I deal with so many babies and everything, it would be awesome if there was a scale in the house where everybody could weigh their baby and give me the numbers, because that would sometimes take away from all the number of visits that a new baby makes to the office for weight and everything. So I would love that. And right now I think there's something where there's a bassinet that weighs and does all of that stuff, but it's a ridiculous amount of money. So if stuff like that was cheaper, that would be amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thank you for that. And I guess as kids get older, is there anything on the, I guess, 10 to 18 year old timeframe that you wish you had more information of or more tools to help you out in that age range?
So in that age range, I would say, I feel like that's like a weird, difficult time, I should say, and not difficult at the same time. Because the kids of that age want their independence, but yet want to be told what to do at the same time. So I would say it's for that age range, I would say it almost having them be, there's no tool that I want more than having them be more open, you know, with their feelings or how, what they're doing and how they want to do things, you know?
Right.
So I feel like there's no tool, but it's emotional well-being at that age, and it's being like happy and healthy. So I feel like it's giving that age range a space where they feel totally secure to say whatever they want.
I think that it would be amazing to have kids be able to be that open and honest in that age range. One last question. In terms of being a mother and being a pediatrician and seeing how kids, I guess, react or respond to our traditional school system, what change would you make or do you think would be the most beneficial for our kids in terms of making a change to the school system or to the way we think about learning and education?
So I think the main thing is, and this may be hard to do in the regular classroom, is I honestly do believe that every child has their own pluses, like their own gifts with them. So I feel like no matter where you are, it's not looking at every child and saying, okay, you passed, but it's making sure that every child has the qualities to go ahead. So, you know, this idea that every child should be passed is wrong, but every child should be passed based on their merits and everything. And if they're not doing something well, it's individually taking each child and saying, what should I do for you? So, you know, I feel like the method should be for learning, very child dependent in my opinion. And, you know, I think as a parent, it's taking what the school is giving and seeing what the child really needs at home and implementing that.
That would be an amazing goal to have a truly individualized experience. But unfortunately, like you said, our school system is not built for that, but hopefully we can make some adjustments.
Exactly.
Yeah, moving forward. So awesome. So thank you so much. This has been amazing and very insightful. Is there anything, as we close, is there anything that you would love to share with parents and both during this time, but also just in general, in terms of how they could make your job easier or I guess more beneficial for the kids?
I would honestly say for me, it's having every family be the best that they are in general. So it, you know, I think that I'm the happiest when each family is happy. So it's just being open and honest with your doctor and being just building that rapport. And if you don't feel that, then you need to go to someone else, you know, who has that with you. So it's finding that person that you click with. And then I think during COVID, it's mainly looking at the bigger picture and staying safe, honestly, and not looking at the little things in life, you know? So, and that I think to me is the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I think that's a great way to finish our conversation and help everyone, like you said, see that bigger picture and hopefully focus on some of the good things that can come in the future. So, so awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and for your wisdom and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Learning Pod Network. If you'd like more information about our offerings and services, please go to www.impactconnections.org. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at ImpactConnectED. We will also be releasing our weekly newsletter called Teaching Tuesday, every Tuesday, where you'll get a summary of all of our latest information and resources that we have found as we explore the best practices of learning pods and education during COVID-19. So thank you, and we hope you'll join us next week. Take care, be well, and teach together.